How would you describe chocolate?
It's like the joy you get from that first kiss from the girl you thought was too good for you, all wrapped up in a tiny little package.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're going to celebrate the sweetest part of Valentine's Day, the chocolate. I'll talk with some of Iowa's finest chocolatiers from Chocolaterie Stomm, The Chocolate Storybook, and Our Lady of the Mississippi Abbey. I'll also talk with Rick and Michael Mast, two brothers who grew up in Iowa and are pioneering a new kind of chocolate making in Brooklyn, New York. They've just published Mast Brothers Chocolate, a family cookbook. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Happy Valentine's Day. Today is supposed to be a day to celebrate love, but for many of us, it has become a day to indulge in sweets. And the sweet of choice is chocolate. Every year, as a nation, we spend over $1 billion on chocolate on Valentine's Day alone. This hour, I'm going to talk with Rick and Michael Mast, two brothers who grew up in Iowa and are pioneering a new kind of chocolate making in Brooklyn, New York. They've just published Mast Brothers Chocolate, a family cookbook. I'm also going to check in with some of Iowa's finest chocolatiers throughout the hour. But first, Iowa Public Radio producer Sarah Bowden took it to the streets of Iowa City, and she asked people to tell her their favorite thing about chocolate.
Anything dark and bitter. I don't know. I think it's part of getting older. I don't like sweet things so much anymore.
Oh, it's great. It's creamy, and it makes your heart warm.
German chocolate love, especially a little coconut, get a little German chocolate cake action going. It's almost as good as you know what.
My favorite type of chocolate is dark chocolate, and I like very complex, rich flavors in my chocolate with flavors that go on and on after you've swallowed it.
I like chocolate with coffee in it, and they go well together.
Anything that's got a cream filling.
The chocolate peanut butter is one of the best combinations I think ever created.
The mint, I really like the fresh mint, and the dark chocolate, again, has heavier, deeper flavors than any other chocolate.
I've never really understood why people like dark chocolate. I think it's a little bit too bitter. And it's nice and sugary, too, which is good.
I don't get that love substitute thing that the scientists write about. But I just really like the long lingering flavors. I'm one of those people who put a little bit in my mouth and just let it melt. I don't chew it. So that way I can get everything the chocolate's offering.
It's like the joy you get from that first kiss from the girl you thought was too good for you, all wrapped up in a tiny little package.
Those were the voices of Brendan Sherry, Marissa Hurst, John Logan, Wally Plotnick, Marie Raven, Garrett Hockham, Scott Butterfeld, and Brian Meeks in Iowa City yesterday. And in just a moment, I will talk with the Mast Brothers, but we are checking in with gifted Iowa chocolatiers throughout the hour. And first on the list today is Ton Stomm. He is president and CEO of Chocolaterie Stomm with four different stores in Iowa, in Des Moines, West Des Moines, Ames, and Dubuque, selling traditional chocolates from Holland and Belgium. Hello, Ton.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being with me today. And I know that the history of Chocolaterie Stomm in Iowa goes back to the 1990s, but the history of the company goes back much, much farther than that. In fact, over 100 years. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, that's correct. As early as 1817, my family started in the pastry baking business. That was in Assen Delft, which is a small town just north of Amsterdam. And then by 1913, my grandfather decided to specialize in chocolate only. So as of 1913, which is now 101 years ago, we've been making chocolate. And that's predominantly, for most of its history, of course, that was in Holland. And since 1997, that's also the case in Iowa.
What made you decide to bring your chocolates to Iowa?
Well, actually, I immigrated to America in 88 when I was a mere lad of 26, 27 years old, and I came here with totally different reasons. But I thought eventually, man, there's got to be a market for great European chocolate in America as well. And so what we did is we started by opening a single shop in Des Moines and started importing it from my brother. And we flew it in from Holland directly.
Oh, wow.
Eventually, we grew it, and then it was easier to just import my brother's kid. So now Eric, his son, is our master chocolatier here in America, and we make everything here in Des Moines, Iowa.
So you had planned on getting away from the family chocolate business, it sounds like.
Well, my father never was pushy. He always said, if you want to do it, that's fine. If you don't, you don't. And there is seven brothers in my my generation. So there were several interested. So I kind of went, well, you know, I was the very last one of the seven. So I went, well, I'll go do something else. So I actually owned a financial planning firm for a long, long, long time.
What makes your chocolate so special?
Well, I think, of course, after 100 years, you've figured out recipes. So we have some creams that are quite unique. We adhere to the European standards. The laws in Europe state that chocolate can only be called chocolate if 100% of the fat in the chocolate comes from the cocoa bean. We adhere to that standard. So there is no what we would call foreign fat in it, meaning fat from any other source than the cocoa bean. And then, of course, you know, our recipes have been around, our recipe for our chocolate has been around since, oh, roughly the late 20s when my grandfather fine-tuned it with a company in Belgium who still makes it for us to this day.
How long is the shelf life for your chocolate? You're making it with fresh ingredients, and it shouldn't last long once you buy it, in my personal opinion, but how long would it last?
Well, of course, that really depends. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, buying a chocolate-dipped strawberry, we're talking a day. If you're buying a cream-filled chocolate, you're probably talking a couple of weeks. If you're buying a dark chocolate bar and you keep it in a nice, cool spot, it could last months and months and months. So it really depends. I mean, chocolate itself doesn't spoil quickly. It is usually what you put in it that could cause, you know, longevity issues.
It seems like when we shop in many different stores, imported chocolate is a lot more common than it used to be, even just in the 90s, which doesn't seem like that long ago. Have you noticed that? I mean, obviously there has been quite a market in Iowa for your chocolate as your stores have grown and moved to different cities. Is there also more competition?
I think there may be some, but you find in general that the imported chocolates, which are mostly Belgian, are so way, way above our price range that we really don't find a strong level of competition from that. I mean, there's some people that think that spending an awful lot more money gets them something better, and then eventually they find out that, you know, that's really not the case. Because my family's always had the philosophy we'd rather have volume than margin. So there's definitely some competition out there, but, you know, it's hard to argue with local chocolatiers that make things fresh versus things that come from abroad and might have sat in an ocean container for 6 to 8 weeks.
Of all the things that you sell in your store, what is the most popular?
At Valentine's Day, I would definitely say it's chocolate-dipped strawberries. Other than that, it would be our assorted bonbons boxes that we sell, you know, with all the different fillings.
And of all the things that you sell in your store, what is your favorite?
Well, it varies. I have a tendency to have a favorite for, you know, 5 to 6 months, and then I switch, and then I have a favorite for 5 to 6 months, and then I switch. But currently, I would say we have a bonbon, a filled chocolate, which has hazelnut praline in it and 3 whole hazelnuts. And that's always been kind of my standard go-to favorite.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Ton, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Ton Stamm is the president and CEO of Chocolaterie Stamm in Des Moines, West Des Moines, Ames, and Dubuque. And these next chocolatiers make their chocolate in Brooklyn, New York, but they grew up in Iowa City to be exact. Rick and Michael Mast are the men behind Mast Brothers Chocolate, handcrafting what they call the world's finest chocolate, a small batch artisan chocolate. They've just published Mast Brothers Chocolate, a family cookbook full of recipes and the story behind their business. Hello, Rick. Hello, Michael.
Yes, we're here.
Hi. Yep. Nice.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Nice to hear both of you. Well, let's talk a little bit about where this idea came from, because as I mentioned, you guys grew up in Iowa. You went your separate ways as time went by. Neither one of you was looking at the chocolate making business when you came back together in Brooklyn, New York. Tell me the story of how this came about.
Yeah, you know, I moved to New York to kind of pursue working in film and photography, and like anybody moving to New York, just sort of not really knowing what was out there, just trying to make something happen for yourself. You know, a couple of years later, my brother moved out to pursue, you know, working in restaurants and as a chef, and you know, we were roommates, and you know, just kind of started messing around with just making things from scratch, making, you know, different foods, whether it was pickling or, you know, pickling anything, making our own bread, beers. And we just kind of got to thinking about chocolate and realizing that nobody really knew how it was made.
So no, you had talked about where does this come from? And nobody in your circle of friends really had an idea.
Yeah, exactly. We were always wondering how things, where things were coming from, whether it was pickling meats, homebrewing beer, and making chocolate. And chocolate was really the thing that we were surprised that here you have the most popular food in the world, and people aren't connected to how it's made at all. It's still definitely a mystery. People are disconnected to the farms that these beautiful cocoa beans grow in, and the process, the beautiful process that it takes to make a world-class chocolate bar.
So when you started having these conversations and wondering about where chocolate came from, were either one of you particularly big fans of chocolate?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that everybody is, whether they like to admit it or not, is a huge fan of chocolate. But it's sort of like we didn't realize how big of a fan we were of chocolate until we tasted really great chocolate. I think that happens a lot, that even the first batches that we were making in our apartment from scratch, those, the very first couple batches, we would taste those and we would be so excited and so thrilled about the complexity and interest in these sort of primitive batches that we were just kind of whipping up in our kitchen, our little apartment kitchen.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk about those first batches of chocolate that you whipped up and searching the world for your source for cocoa beans and so much more. That's coming up in just a moment. This hour, we are celebrating Valentine's Day with a conversation about chocolate. And with me right now are Rick and Michael Mast, the Mast Brothers. They are behind Mast Brothers Chocolate, and they're also behind a new book, Mast Brothers Chocolate, a Family Cookbook. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate and a miracle or two? The Candyman. The Candyman can. The Candyman can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good. Who can take a rainbow, wrap it in a sigh, soak it in the sun to make a strawberry lemon pie?
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with chocolatiers from Iowa and around the state of Iowa. With me right now are the Mast Brothers, Rick and Michael Mast. They grew up in Iowa City. They now make craft chocolate, artisan chocolate, in Brooklyn, New York, and they've just published the new book, Mast Brothers Chocolate, a Family Cookbook. And just before the break, we were talking about those small batches of chocolate you started experimenting with in your apartment. You guys were living together at the time, and I don't know which one of you wants to tell the story, but how did you even go about getting cocoa beans to start making chocolate from scratch in the apartment?
That was kind of the exciting thing that, you know, how do you get beans? I mean, chocolate making is so shrouded in mystery. We were excited just to see how easy or difficult it would be to get beans. We ended up getting our first bag of beans from the Dominican Republic through basically after exhausting a million different online resources and all sorts of things, we ended up calling basically just like a Wall Street commodities broker that cocoa bean importer and being like, hey, can we just get a bag of beans? And sure enough, we were able to get a bag freighted to our third-story walk-up in Brooklyn, and we had a bag of beans in our living room while we were doing all sorts of experiments, and it was pretty wild.
So you have to start out by roasting the beans, right? I mean, walk me through the process as you did it in your apartment.
Well, believe it or not, I mean, the process is, we've come a long way. Our chocolate is heralded the world over, as they say. But the initial process is very similar to how we do it now. We roast in convection ovens. We roasted in our home kitchen oven when we began. After a really delicate roast, you have to take the shells off. And the way we would do it back in the old days is actually just kind of crack it up with a rolling pin or something, and then we would use a blow dryer or just like blow it outside, and the shells would, because they're lighter, would fly off into the air. And then we'd throw those cocoa nibs into a juicer back in our apartment, and those would grind them down, and you would just get such a fresh, aromatic chocolate with that, that we already knew that something was really special about this simple, to really simplify this process and take chocolate making out of the industrial age and really really back into the kitchen.
Well, and Michael, those first batches of chocolate, did they taste good?
I mean, it was really like tasting chocolate for the first time for us. Just the purity of ingredients, just using just beans and sugar. That's really something that was unheard of. If you look on the back of most chocolate bars, you'll see on the ingredients a whole list, a whole list of ingredients. You'll have added cocoa butters, you'll have emulsifiers, soy lecithin, vanilla, but just using this quality of bean, you know, and the kind of light roasting profiles we were giving, we were able to really kind of bring out those unique characteristics that I think neither one of us really knew existed in chocolate.
So there has been a major movement in the United States over the last several years, the movement of buying locally, eating locally. And chocolate is something that most people don't feel you can really eat locally. Was that your inspiration to try to create a local chocolate?
Yeah, well, that was definitely the part of the movement that we kind of grew up in Brooklyn. I mean, we were very much heavily involved prior to creating Mass Brothers Chocolate in the sort of food, the Brooklyn food, what was going on in the Brooklyn food world, which has really influenced the world over at this point. And we wanted to be the local chocolate. We really thought that chocolate making could be an experience for the community, like going to visit your butcher shop or your wine shop or your, you know, that you really should have a connection to the makers of all aspects of your food consumption. So it really got us excited to be able to essentially reintroduce chocolate to our whole community. And it's a pretty exciting opportunity.
Now, when you first started making chocolate at home, you both had other jobs and other pursuits. This was something that you were devoted to in almost all of your off hours, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Michael, could you tell me about the first time you actually sold your chocolate?
You know, we just made it for ourselves. It was just for, you know, as a hobby. And we kind of share with our friends and family. And we knew we were onto something. We knew we were making something delicious and that most people hadn't tasted before. And then we wanted to take it one step further. So we took it to local farmers markets and to this great artist market at the Brooklyn Flea, and just kind of introduced ourselves and our chocolate at those venues.
When were you able to turn it into something that was a business that could support both of you?
Well, one thing, just kind of going back, that we got really excited about and kind of learned early on was that really very few people were making chocolate from scratch, actually bringing in their own beans and making chocolate from scratch in the world. There was maybe just a handful of companies doing so. For the most part, people are bringing in chocolate purchased in bulk and kind of melting them down and making their own beautiful creations. But what really got us excited was that hands-on process and having that direct relationship with the source and with the farmers and really making it from scratch. And, you know, so kind of just getting into that world, we knew that that was something not many people were doing, and we were excited to turn into a business.
And where do you get your beans from?
We source from about five or six different regions across the world. Cocoa beans grow along the equator, and we've worked with the Dominican Republic and the single estate in Madagascar since really day one. Also really great beans in Belize, Venezuela, Papua New Guinea. And we're working on even bringing some in from Tanzania coming up here shortly.
And I know that you're very careful about selecting the beans that you use and about finding farmers who you feel have sustainable practices in selecting those beans. We've heard a lot in the last couple of years about a coming cocoa bean shortage worldwide and the fact that this is not a sustainable crop in many parts of the world. Is this something, do you feel like the farmers that you're working with could be part of the future of chocolate?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, where we're sourcing our beans are really different than the kind of farms that you're probably hearing about in the news that you're reporting on. We're dealing with a lot of small family farms with a very much a sort of entrepreneurial spirit themselves. It's a growing quality focused farming relationship that we're dealing with. About over half of the cocoa beans in the world are actually grown in Western Africa, in Ivory Coast, and in Ghana. And that's primarily when you're hearing about shortages or the cost of cocoa beans rising, all that kind of thing, it's you're talking about a very low grade cocoa bean that's made for anything from cosmetic products to larger industrial scale chocolate manufacturing. So the farms that we're working with really are, there's a lot of growth potential. With some of the early relationships we've had with some great cooperatives in Dominican Republic and Belize in particular, they're creating farmer business models that are now being replicated throughout the world just because our relationship with these farmers has been so successful, so mutually beneficial. And it's really great to see these farmers being able to take pride in a quality-driven environment.
I'm talking with Rick and Michael Mast, the Mast brothers, and they just published a new book called Mast Brothers Chocolate, a family cookbook full of really amazing recipes that involve very fine chocolate. We'll continue our conversation throughout the hour. We're also going to visit with some other Iowa chocolatiers. And right now we have a frequent guest on the program. Dan Knight is on the phone. And Dan Knight is a pianist and musician. Of course, Dan, you and I spent last Valentine's Day together celebrating love songs. But you have a chocolate.
Yes, we did. Yeah. I miss you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Dan, and happy Valentine's Day to you, too. And you have a chocolate story for us?
Oh, we have a great chocolate story. Julie and I, it was the second year I played at the Montreux Jazz Festival. It was in 1998. And we had a little bit of time ahead of when the festival was scheduled doing what it was supposed to play. So we went to Lausanne, Switzerland, for a few days just to kind of hang out. And we stayed in this place that was right in the middle of the old town. And it was a couple of doors down from the Steinway dealership. So I went over to play at the Steinway dealership, and I came back to the hotel room, and Julie was just going crazy. She's like, Dan, there's a great chocolate around here somewhere. Somebody's making chocolate, and it smells so good. So we went on a chocolate search, just kind of following our nose. Following our nose, we get around, and we see this place. It's called Ungared, and the guy's making chocolate. So we go in, and I look at him, and I said, Monsieur, you have a beautiful shop. And he goes, sir, butchers have shops. This is a boutique. So we look around and the chocolates just like to die for. So we buy some chocolate. We go home to our hotel and the chocolate is just absolutely fantastic. So I have to go back because I have done this like enormous faux pas. And I take some of my recordings and I say, sir, we've tasted some of your artistry. Hopefully I'm an artist in music. So I would like to share some of my recordings with you. So we went back the next day, and the guy gave me us like 3-4 pounds of chocolate. He was just so happy. And so we got home from the whole trip and posted something on one of Rick Steves' travels websites when they were looking for the best chocolate in the whole world. And Julie posted this thing, and she said, you know, Ungarn in Lausanne, Switzerland makes the best chocolate anywhere. So long story short, somebody contacted us from a competition that, they were kind of looking for competitors for. It was an international chocolate competition in Europe, and they wanted to know if this gentleman would consider competing. So we contacted him, and he said, well, yes, of course, and he won.
Oh, wow. Oh, Dan, that's such a great story. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We send greetings and love from balmy North Carolina.
All right. Well, happy Valentine's Day to you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
And Julie, too. And as I mentioned earlier, we are going to be checking in with Iowa Chocolatiers throughout the hour. I'll continue my conversation with the Mast Brothers in just a few minutes. But first, there are many great chocolate makers in Iowa. One of them is with me right now. Steve Shearer and his wife, Meg, are the owners and operators of the Chocolate Storybook on Grand Avenue in Des Moines. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
The Chocolate Storybook opened back in 1985, but you and your wife got involved about 12 years ago. Was chocolate something that had been a part of your life before that?
Well, let me tell you about what I knew about chocolate 12 years ago. I knew that it tasted good, and that's about it.
So I'm guessing you've probably learned quite a lot since then.
Yes, we have. We certainly have. And the most important thing we've learned is people ask me, why does your chocolate taste better? And I can tell them, I can't tell you it tastes better, but I can tell you it's very fresh. And fresh chocolate always tastes better than older chocolate. And if you go down any grocery store, you'll see chocolate that is a little bit old.
Well, and I know that you're very proud of the fact that you don't make your chocolates with food additives and preservatives, which, of course, are included in most of the chocolates we can buy on the store shelves at the grocery store. Does that mean that your chocolate is fresher and it has to be eaten faster?
That's what we want. We want people to eat it right away and buy some more. That's our goal. Yes. And it's a recipe that has worked for us over the years. And, for example, we're making right now our Valentine's Day chocolates, and other companies are literally making their Easter chocolates. So that's why when people have our chocolate and they give our chocolate as a gift, it's something special.
There have been different trends in chocolate over the last couple of decades, and you've been in the chocolate business, as I mentioned, for 12 years. Have you changed some of your chocolates to meet these trends? A lot of people like really dark chocolate now. That wasn't something that we saw so much 10 years ago.
Well, can I let you in on a little secret? We sell about 90% of our sales have always been milk chocolate over dark chocolate.
Mm.
But people that like dark chocolate appear to be very loud. Yes. So, but what we have done is we came out with, about 3 years ago, my wife Meg came out with a product called Naked Bunny Confections of all natural chocolates, of complete natural chocolates, and with dark chocolate recipes in barks and toffees. And we actually sell that at Whole Foods and other places. And so that's been a big hit.
I also noticed that you seem to be selling quite a lot of chocolate-covered bacon.
We want to be the chocolate bacon king of the Midwest. That's our goal. How's that for a goal?
Well, how's that going so far?
Well, it's going well. This is the first time we've done it for special events. We've dipped bacon in chocolate. But this is our first Valentine's Day. We have over 100 orders for to pick up bacon already. And we're hoping to sell more today.
And that sounds a little like a novelty to me. I know that bacon is really, really hip right now. Does it taste good? Do you like it?
I love it. And people either, it's kind of, I don't know, licorice, people either love it or don't. So the ones that love it really like it. And we dip it in milk chocolate. We also dip it in dark chocolate, which I think tastes better. So far it's something fun, and Valentine's Day is also not just about chocolates, but it's also about fun.
What is your favorite thing to eat that you sell?
My favorite thing are long stem strawberries at Valentine's Day. We'll dip 10,000 strawberries in chocolate, and we also sell those to, our customers pre-order them. They start ordering them in mid-January. And that is my absolute favorite product that we make. These are strawberries that are grown in Southern California specifically for Valentine's Day.
What is Valentine's Day like in your shop?
think of like it's the Super Bowl, and we have everybody that's working from making the chocolate, dipping the strawberries, to packaging the strawberries to or and other products, and ringing up customers, and people come in happy and they leave happier. We like that.
Now, we buy a lot of chocolate for the holiday season. We buy a lot of chocolate for Easter. Is Valentine's Day the biggest chocolate day for you?
It's the single biggest chocolate day, yes, is Valentine's Day. And whoever invented that, I got to send him a nice little note.
All right, Steve, thank you so much.
Sure, thank you.
Steve Shearer and his wife Meg are the owners and operators of the Chocolate Storybook on Grand Avenue in Des Moines. This hour, a celebration of chocolate on Valentine's Day. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with a chocolatier who lives in a place you might not expect at the Our Lady of the Mississippi Abbey. And then we'll also get back to our conversation with the Mast Brothers in just a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we are celebrating the sweetest part of Valentine's Day, the chocolate. The Mast Brothers are still here. I'll return to our conversation in just a moment. But as I have mentioned, Iowa is home to many talented chocolatiers, and a number of them live in a place that might surprise you. Our Lady of the Mississippi Abbey is a cloistered monastic community of Trappistine nuns near Dubuque. The nuns produce delicious and decadent chocolates and caramels, and Sister Kathleen O'Neill, the production manager for Monastery Candy, is here with me now. Hello, Sister Kathleen.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm very happy to be here.
And I know that the monastery was founded in 1964, and sisters began making caramels in 1965. How did this come about?
Well, the monastery we were founded from in Massachusetts, Mount St. Mary's Abbey, already had a candy business going. And in fact, they had received the caramel recipe as a gift from a Greek candy maker in Providence, Rhode Island, who passed it on to the sisters there as a way to make to support themselves, and they passed it on to us.
When the caramels started to be produced in Dubuque at the Abbey, how did word get out? Who was buying these caramels?
Yes, well, at first there was some door-to-door going into town to try to get some of the local small businesses to carry our candies, and that went well. And then actually another of our monasteries, the Abbey of Gethsemane in Louisville, Kentucky, over a number of years loaned us parts of their mailing list. And for some years we used some of their mailing list every year as well as our own growing list to send out an annual catalog.
The caramels are still the foundation of your candy operation, but you started branching out. Tell me about some of the other things you make.
Okay, well, the caramels themselves come in two flavors, a vanilla caramel and a chocolate caramel, and most people just associate caramel with vanilla. But we do have a chocolate one, and then that was from virtually the beginning. And then very early on, we also started coating the caramels. So we coat them with either light or dark chocolate. And that's probably the thing people like most of all our products is the light and dark chocolate-coated caramels. And then about when the business was about, I don't know, maybe about 15 to 20 years old, we started producing some mint candies. And we have a non-chocolate mint candy that we call Irish mint. And then we have a chocolate mint candy also. That's our Swiss mint. And then about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, we added a hazelnut melt-away, which is a mix of mainly milk chocolate, but some darker chocolate also, and, of course, hazelnuts.
It sounds wonderful. And do you have chocolate experts, chocolatiers, that were part of your community already, or was this something that members of your community had to get training in to be able to create these new products?
We've all learned. we learn about how to make the candies while we're here. And some of the jobs are actually not too skilled, and some are slightly skilled, and some are more skilled.
the point of these chocolates and these candies and these caramels, of course, is to support your community at the Abbey. Does that mean there's a limit to the amount of growth that you can have in this business?
Yes, there is, in fact. We are not looking to grow our business beyond what we need to support ourselves, which is a different from most business models, and it makes it a little tricky for us. We don't want to sell too little so that we don't have enough income, and we don't want to support too much so that we're disturbing our monastic life by overworking. The business keeps us very busy, actually, so we have to be a little bit careful that we continue to be nuns.
Are there times when you have to turn down orders because that would exceed the amount of supply you feel you need to create?
Well, now with the web, that's a lot easier. What we simply do is start taking items off the web. This is mainly before Christmas. Our sales are overwhelmingly for Christmas, and then Valentine's Day would probably be the next biggest. But we would normally have plenty of candy on hand Valentine's Day. But some point in December, we often run out of some of our items, and then we just take them off our website.
Do you get to eat the candies?
That's a good one. We do on occasion. Part of our monastic way of life is that we don't snack or eat between meals, and we wouldn't just on our own pop one in our mouth. But occasionally, if we have a celebration of somebody's birthday or just on a Sunday, we will bring out some of the candy for ourselves to eat too. Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Oh, that's tough. Probably the hazelnut meltaways are my favorite, but our basic vanilla caramel is really wonderful, and our chocolate-coated caramels, both the dark chocolate and the milk chocolate-coated, we always like those.
Sister Kathleen, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Charity.
Sister Kathleen O'Neill, she is the production manager for Monastery Candy at Our Lady of the Mississippi Abbey in Dubuque. And with me still, the Mast brothers, Rick and Michael Mast. They have just published the book, Mast Brothers Chocolate, a Family Cookbook, and they make small batch craft chocolate in their factory in Brooklyn. And Rick, can you tell me, for people who haven't had a chance to have your chocolate and it's not sold just anywhere, can you describe what makes your chocolate taste different? We've talked a lot about the process and where the beans come from and how they're processed, but what makes it different when I eat it?
Well, our chocolate is, like Michael touched on briefly, it's the simplicity of its ingredients really highlight the unique characteristics of the beans. So our ingredients are simply cocoa beans and sugar. And because of this simplicity, it's really flavor forward. We're not adding any extra cocoa butters, emulsifiers, extra fats. We're not even adding vanilla and things like that to the base of our chocolate. Our chocolate it's all dark chocolate is what we're making right now. And the complexities are so drawn out because of the simplicity of just using those two ingredients. It's very much started a new way of making chocolate that really changes your idea about what chocolate tastes like.
You also have produced this whole book that is full of recipes that call for dark chocolate. And of course, Mast Brothers chocolate would be a wonderful ingredient in all of these. And I was astonished by the variety of recipes you have in this book. And of course, we're not just talking about cookies and brownies and cakes, but you have soda and pies and popsicles and balsamic vinaigrette. How did you come up with
all sorts of savory items?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we really, the community that we've kind of built around Mast Brothers. I mean, we've got about 50, chocolate makers in our kind of Brooklyn community here now. So we live and breathe chocolate, and we don't think of chocolate as just being a chocolate bar. We think of it as being potentially a dry rub for your steak on your, when you're barbecuing in the summer. Classic chocolate soda or the classic egg cream. So yeah, chocolate as a beverage is something really fascinating to us. But sweet, savory, liquid, chocolate can really make something magnificent in any form.
Now, I mentioned before that we can't find Mast Brothers chocolate just anywhere, although I'm sure there are a couple places in Iowa that you can buy it. I know that there's one in Iowa City, and that is John's Grocery. And our producer, Sarah Bowden, visited yesterday to talk to them about having Mast Brothers chocolate on the shelf. And this is what they said.
And I emailed the Mass Brothers and asked them if, when they got to making enough chocolate, could they put us on the waiting list and hopefully sell it at John's Grocery in their hometown. And they said, we love John's Grocery. We used to steal stuff there when we were kids, and we went to the head of the line. And they sent out orders right away.
So that's a little bit of a dirty laundry. Maybe you didn't want aired. But so having lifted stuff from John's Grocery in your childhood, that created a special bond.
Yeah, I mean, John's Grocery is an Iowa, you know, legend. That's an Iowa icon right there. It should be on the, you know, landmarked. You know, we were joking this morning that we need to announce that, you know, if you go into John's Grocery today and you say, you mention the Mass Brothers, that Wally will give you a kiss there.
So your chocolate is lauded by critics. I mean, you've now published this cookbook that can show us different ways, very different ways to use chocolate in our kitchens, in our homes, and not all of them sweet. You have a small factory in Brooklyn. The process is, by its very nature, a long, labor-intensive process to make this chocolate. Michael, where does it go from here?
You know, our goal is to really reintroduce chocolate to the world. So we've continued to kind of have this organic growth with how we make chocolate, and we can only make so much. And you know, but we can really continue this organic trajectory, and to really continue to introduce it to everybody. Again, yeah, the only place in Iowa City is John's Grocery. You know, there's really a limited amount of chocolate we can make right now, and we really want to make sure that everybody can kind of have that luxury to really see what chocolate can taste like.
Are there other chocolate makers who've been inspired by what you do, Rick?
Yeah, it's been really exciting. I mean, I think that, yeah, when we first started, you know, 6-7 years ago, there were just a handful of us. And now I think that just in the United States alone, there's like probably about 50 small batch chocolate makers starting to pop up. So it's really created a stir. It's really created a whole movement. It's very similar to, you know, where wine, you know, the kind of the California wine movement, the micro roast coffee industry, the craft beer industry, lots of parallels in all of those. So to me, I just think it's really exciting. I mean, I think that everybody, you know, everybody in the U.S., everybody in Iowa deserves to have a chocolate, a beautiful, complex, handcrafted chocolate available to them.
Now, one of the stories that you write about in your book that surprised me the most, and we've talked about visiting farmers and finding just the right beans for your chocolate, but you even went to great lengths, at least once, with importing your chocolate to hire a sailboat to actually sail across the ocean to pick up the chocolate. Why did you go to such lengths to do that?
Why are you saying that it doesn't sound rational? I mean,
maybe it's not the most efficient way.
Well, it's really, I mean, really, it says a lot about our company as a whole, that we really are looking for the most simple, beautiful, delicious ways to go about every aspect of our company. And sourcing beans to a certain extent, especially when it comes to the shipping of them from, you know, from Dominican Republic, from wherever, it meant that you had to participate in sort of, you know, the global industrial agricultural system. That why would a small batch handcrafted chocolate maker need to do that? So we were kind of thinking about ways that we could really take every aspect of our business to the next level, and Michael and I were kind of talking about it late one evening, and I think it just got brought up, oh, well, let's just sail them. And it sounded so easy and so beautiful and whimsical that we just were determined to do it. And we were lucky enough that kind of the stars aligned, and once we put these good ideas out there, I feel like the whole world starts trying to make them happen, because we ended up being introduced to this captain named Captain Eric Lawfield, and he built this beautiful 70-foot steel schooner with three masts, built for sailing freight in his yard in Cape Cod over the past 25 years, and it was just about done, and he was looking for someone to take it on a maiden voyage. And it's, I mean, that is, that's like fate. That's like a whole nother thing going on that enabled this first trip. And we sailed 20 metric tons of cocoa beans from the Dominican Republic and brought them directly into the Brooklyn container yard. You know, it's kind of in the shadows of these huge container ships. And we, took it out bag by bag.
Wow.
And,
is that something you'll do again?
Absolutely. I mean, it's much, obviously, it's a very ambitious, complex thing. I mean, first of all, there really aren't too many, if any, other capable sailboats able to do something like this. So there's that issue. But already, just our single trip has inspired another small movement of thinking of shipping alternatives of more. I mean, let's be honest. Oil and gas are something that we should be questioning how much is used, and wind is free. And with this huge growth of small business, of small manufacturing, this rejuvenation we're having, why not rethink it in every aspect of the business? So there's a great organization right now called White Sails Trading. It's really trying to push sail freight as being a viable business model, which is really exciting.
We have just 1 minute left. And Rick, I'm wondering if you could tell me about one recipe in the book that you might think people should be celebrating Valentine's Day with.
Yeah, well, with Valentine's Day, I mean, any excuse to eat chocolate and drink some wine sounds like a good idea. So if you've never tried your hand at making bonbons from home, why not just, break open a nice bottle of wine, a bottle of red wine that you would drink. Don't just get something that you would think that should just be for cooking. Definitely get something that is full of flavor, and try your hand at making some bonbons from home. That's fun. It gives an excuse to eat melted chocolate and to drink wine. So even the mistakes are delicious.
All right. Well, Rick and Michael Mast, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having us. It's been awesome. Yeah.
Thanks so much for having us. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day to you too. Rick and Michael Mast are the men behind Mast Brothers Chocolate. They grew up in Iowa City. They now make craft chocolate in Brooklyn, New York, and they've just published a new book, Mast Brothers Chocolate, a family cookbook. It's full of the story of how they make their chocolate and how this company came to be, and hundreds of recipes that you can make with fine dark chocolate. And with me now to celebrate Valentine's Day is Ben
Charity
Kiefer.
I see you have a nice red shirt on today. I guess I neglected the red. Why did I do that? I don't know.
Don't neglect the chocolate.
That's
the takeaway.
I have a chocolatey jacket on. Maybe I was thinking of your program when I got dressed today. But anyway, on NewsBuzz at noon today, we're going to, of course, talk about the weather. I wish you could say it was the middle of March, but we still got quite a bit of winter ahead of us. We're going to talk with Alan Zarnetsky of the University of Northern Iowa to find out how the winter we've had so far sets in historical context and what may be in store for us as well. Also, a couple other tidbits. Let me throw in here a band, Lake Street Dive. We'll be talking with one of the band members. A little-known band, get this, Charity, makes their debut on the Colbert Report. This is not them you hear in the background, but we'll hear them later in the hour. And Bridget Carney is an Iowa City native, and she's in that band. We'll talk with her.
Okay, wonderful. That and more coming up on News Buzz today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. Happy Valentine's Day. Sugar, sugar.
Of loving you, I just can't believe it's true. I just can't believe the wonder of this feeling too. I just can't believe it's true. Ah, sugar.